the second Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva. Chaviv Adam Shenivra Bitzelem. Hu Haya Omer. Mishnah Yudalid. Hu Haya Omer. Rabbi Akiva used to say, Chaviv Adam, beloved, is man. Shenivra Bitzelem. He was created in the image. See, second. Right? Chaviv Hu Haya Omer. Mishnah Yudalid. Look for the Yudalid. You don't have a... Chaviv Adam, beloved, is man, Shenivra B'Tselem, because he was created in the image, obviously it means the image of God. Chibor Yaseiro no Dadlo. There is even greater love by virtue of the fact that no Dadlo, God let him know Shenivra B'Tselem. If you look for the number 190, that's where I am. 190. Chiva Yaseiro no Dadlo. Greater love. God demonstrated his great love for man by virtue of the fact that he let him know that he is created in the image. Shenema. Bitzelem Elokim Asa et HaAdam. He tells Noach that you should know you and your children, all of mankind, have been created in the image of God. So first of all, we have to go back to the word Chaviv Adam, man is beloved, Shenivra. He was created, Bitzelem, in the image. Nivra. What does Nivra mean? So I'll tell you, at one point I was thinking that I would really deal with the idea of man being created and deal with all of the issues of evolution and Darwinism, and I decided nay, I chavnish kin kayach for them. But I did want to say it gave me an opportunity to spend a lot of time with a very fascinating book, was Sich Verstehe Kemat Kan Wort Nicht. Truly, do you recognize this book?
Yeah.
Not by chance. By Dr. Lee Spetner. The Fall of Neo-Darwinian Theory. Now, as I read the book, I see he's talking about NDT. Ich weiß noch nicht, what's NDT? So I thought maybe there was a merger between our two giants in Yerushalayim, NDS and IDT. You see the big building over there on Harachotzvim? One side of the building is IDT and the other is NDS. Those are the two big computer companies right here. If you put IDS together with IDT with NDS, you get NDT. But I found out that that's not the NDT that Dr. Spetner is talking about. By the way, he thanks his wife, Julie, for all the help that she gave him. I'm telling you, it's a fascinating book. By the way, another one of the people whom he thanks over here, he thanks Professor Alvin Radkowski. Olivar Shalom, Professor Alvin Radkowski of the Department of Nuclear Engineering of Tel Aviv University. And to Hilda Krumbine, who edited some of the early drafts. We got everybody in over here. It's a fascinating book, but I tell you, to say that a little bit I understand, but I do understand enough to realize that he shatters NDT, the Neo-Darwinian theory. In other words, there have been all sorts of problems with the theory of evolution. And here it was a group of professors from all sorts of different disciplines got together in order to buttress and strengthen the theory. And they came up with what is known as NDT, the Neo-Darwinian theory. So Dr. Spetner does a job on them, does a very, very beautiful job. It's fascinatingly written. If you have a summer off someplace up in a mountaintop, you understand. It's really, I've had a lot of fun, and I plan on going back to a number of the chapters here. This would have been necessary if I was going to deal with the word Nivra. Chaviv Adam Shenivra, created. We believe that man was an act of God's creation. By the way, already Gedolei Yisrael of 100 years ago, Rav Kook writes it, others write it. Judaism would not at all be in any kind of difficulty in the event that somebody could prove the theory of evolution. Because Judaism never claimed that there was no process of evolution. On the contrary, there are all sorts of medrashim that say HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hoya Bono Olam Otu Makrivon, God created worlds and then He destroyed them. We have absolutely no responsibility to believe that the 6 days of creation were 6 days of 24 hours. For most of those days, sun and moon were not really operating. For that matter, also man was created full grown, so all of the creation may have been was certainly created full grown. I imagine if Adam HaRishon wanted to dig for coal, he would have found coal. Coal is supposed to be a billion years old, but this was all part of the creation. We're not at all shook up. Rav Kook was one of the first who wrote it that Torah can fit in with all of that, because Torah, in the early chapters of Bereshis, Torah is not telling us history. Torah is presenting the plan of morality for the world. And we're going to see that. It's around the third or fourth chapter where it says, Zeh Sefer Toldos Adam, this is the story of the generations of men, and the second story of creation is told to us. Only at that point on does history begin. Until that point, there is no necessity to believe the story of creation that it happened precisely that way. Of course, what is fascinating is, what's most fascinating is if one takes the order of creation, say the progress or evolution of creation in those 6 days of creation, it's nearly precisely what scientists call the theory of evolution. In other words, everything in creation went from the lower to the higher. Who was the last to come into being? The last to come into being was man. Isn't that what the theory of evolution said? In other words, everything is moving from the... It begins with the inanimate object, the domain. From there it goes on the Tuesday and Wednesday. We're already talking about that which grows out of the ground, the tzomeach. And it's going to take until Thursday and then Friday for chai, living beings, to come to be created. And ultimately, medaber, the crown of creation, is man, who is called medaber, because medaber represents the idea that man has intellect. So I say, we could talk for days on the word nivra, but I want to talk rather about, we'll leave nivra to Dr. Spetner, and anybody who can get their hands on the book. Are there still copies available in the world? In your basement?
In the bookstore.
In the bookstores. Good. It should be, it's a book that should be read. We're going to talk about B'Tselem. Man was created B'Tselem. What does it mean that man was created B'Tselem? What does it mean? God is absolutely spiritual. Man is really physical, but God is the one who implanted within this human being sparks of divinity. There is something divine. We call it a neshama, a nefesh, a soul that man, that God implanted in man. How does it express itself? In other words, obviously, we're not going to translate Tzelem Elokim form or image. God has no form and has no image. The Tzelem must obviously be talking about the intellectual capacity of man. The Tzelem must be talking about aspects of his personality. Tzelem must be describing that which differentiates man from the rest of the physical world. So we're going to take a look. We're going to see what Tzelem means. By the way, it's not simply because Rabbi Akiva uses the word Tzelem. So I decided, I now can talk about Tzelem Elokim. No, I think that it's all basic and fundamental to an understanding of what Rabbi Akiva is saying. What Rabbi Akiva is saying is man is truly in the image of God. For example, what was the first Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva? Schok v'kalot rosh, margilin le'erva. And then what was the rest? Masrot siyog la'osher, nedodim siyog la'prish, o masoret siyog la'torah, siyog la'chochma shtika. What was the whole Mishnah? The first Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva was talking about fences. Fences. Man has to create fences. Man has to make walls in order to that he avoid the pitfalls of life. We related this back in last week's year. We related this back to the very first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The men of the great assembly, Anshei Knesset HaGadola, said three things. One of the three things they said was Asu Siyog LaTorah, make a fence around Torah. I once explained, whatever it is that God demands of us is something that is reflected, so to speak, in the personality of God himself. The idea was first expressed by Rav Soloveitchik, but in its relationship to Pirkei Avos, and what we are learning, what we learned in the first meeting, what we're learning here, I'll explain exactly what I mean. At the end of last week's shiur, we talked about that Rashi in Shir Hashirim. We talked about Sugo Bashoshanim, the hedge of roses. Rashi gives the two examples, Chosen and Kala. It's after the wedding. She turns to him and she says, I've seen a drop of blood. And all of a sudden, nobody is there, and the two separate. There's a hedge of roses that comes down between them and separates Chosen from Kala until such time that she will be able to go to the mikveh. A man is walking, it's a hot day, he's walking along the road. He sees a beautiful fruit hanging from a tree. He stretches out his hand in order to take the fruit, and there's a voice that tells him, no, 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 not yours, not yours. Where does that voice come from? The inner voice, the inner conscience of man. This is the Rebbein Shlomo telling him, no, 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 you're not allowed to, that's not yours. You're going to have to wait until you come home. A sense of a human being withdrawing. This is the aspect of the divine that permitted the world to come into being. Chachmei HaKabbalah say that in order for a world to be created, God had to practice what's called tzimtzum. Symptom is contraction. Because Molei Kol Haaretz Kevodo, God fills the entire world. Where's their place? Where's their place for a physical world within a space that is taken by God? What is God called? He's called Makom. He fills all space. The Zohar says, Let Atar Panui Milei. There is no place on the face of this earth where God is not. How did a world come into being? So the Chachmei HaKabbalah say that God practiced Sod HaTzimtzum. That is the secret of Tzimtzum. He He withdrew. He withdrew into himself in order to make place for a world to come into being. The ability to withdraw, the ability to place limitations, just as the Rebbeinu Shem placed limitations, because if he would have spilled over into the whole world, there would be no world. He placed those limitations. This is what he requires of man. Man throughout life has to know that there are limits. This you can do, that you can't do anymore. You have to place siyagim. There's a famous medrash. Let me read the medrash to you. The medrash says the following. And this medrash the Rav used to explain Mahut Simtsum. What is this contraction that we are talking about? That God practices so that a world can come into being. Says the medrash says the following. B'shor Shamalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, when God said to Moshe, make for me a Migdash, make for me a Mishkan, make for me a home that I shall live in it. Moshe trembled and was taken aback, and he said, God, Hinei Hashamayim Ushimei Hashamayim Lo Yechal Kalucha, the heavens and the heavens above the heavens cannot contain you. What do you mean? You're going to come and dwell in this little structure that we will build? V'atah omerli, and you tell me, V'osuli Migdash, make unto me a holy place, V'shachamti v'tocham, I will dwell in their midst. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God says, responds to Moshe, he says, Moshe, lo kishem shata savor, it's not the way you think. All that you have to do is put 20 pillars, 20 pillars in the north, 20 in the south, and in that enclosed area, that's where I am going to dwell. If I choose, I can contract and withdraw myself there. V'no adati l'chasham, there I will reveal myself to you. The first Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva is expressing this idea that man, being created in the image of God, is able to practice tzimtzum, is able to practice a degree of self-control, to make fences around himself. The animal world is incapable of placing any kind of fences around themselves. You know what animals need? Animals indeed need real fences. As we said, we could even go one step further. We're going to go one step further. We said at the end of last week's shiur that Robert Frost said, "Good fences make good neighbors." So we have co-opted Robert Frost, and we say that good fences make good people. There's another difference between what kind of fences we're talking about and the kind of fences that Robert Frost is talking about. Robert Frost is talking about a physical fence. The greatness of the human fence is invisible. There's nobody there. It's me. My own will is able to create that which is not going to permit me to go beyond what the letter of the law is. So that's one aspect of Tzelem Elokim. A major aspect of Tzelem Elokim. Just as God withdrew, just as he created limits in order that he should be able to bring a world into being, so too a human being must know how to place limits upon himself. But there's a great deal more. I went back, I don't know how many years, a sefer that I first learned, I'm afraid to say it, 50 years ago. How do you like that? Oh, you must be so impressed. I remembered something that I learned in a sefer 50 years ago. That's okay. Nothing wrong with being impressed. And we're going to use that, a sefer called Doreinu Mul She'elot HaNetzach, Our Generation Facing the Eternal Questions, by Dr. Aaron Barth. I think he was the what was he? What do they call the fellow who runs the Bank of Israel? I think he was the Stanley Fisher of his day. You understand? Stanley Fisher. All right. We're going to see what he has to say about the description of man being created in the image of God. And he makes a number of comments. He says that man being created means that there are aspects, and we'll see a number of them, of the personality of the human being that are so godlike, divine-like. He begins with the first. He doesn't do this, but I'm going to do this. What do we believe about God? We believe that God is Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. He's one. Unity. Ultimately, regardless of what the world may look like, there is an inner striving and a hope for a world that will ultimately be unified. We, of course, look forward to it in terms of V'hoy Hashem L'melech al kol ha'aretz. God will be king over the whole. By Yom Ahu, Yi Hashem Echad U'Shmo Echad. God will be one. His name will be one. The whole world will be united. The world has always made attempts, feeble though they may be, but certainly with an intent, you know, whether it was a League of Nations, or it was the United Nations, or whether it was the various NATO and a CETO, there is a desire for oneness in the world. The desire for oneness, by the way, only exists in the mind of men, not in the animal kingdom. There is no movement any place in the world. Cats of the world unite. No such thing. There's no such thing. Doesn't even exist within the mental framework of any animal. You know, an international conference of elephants, and they're from all over the world, discussing their social problems and all sorts of other problems. There's no such thing. It's not part of the wherewithal of the emotional or spiritual makeup of an animal. But the idea that there's a constant striving for unity, there's a constant striving for unity even in terms of thought. Whatever we do, we begin with a problem. The problem is that there's one position, there's a second position. What do we look for ultimately? We look ultimately to be able to bring the two together, find a synthesis, find a unity, be able to resolve differences. Resolving differences and bringing ultimately to unity is a basic part of the makeup of a human being. That comes from the fact that we were created by the most absolute oneness of it all, which is God Himself. Second, God is not physical. We believe that. He's not goof. He's not physical. We can't even think in physical terms. The greatness of the human being, as a scholar who once said, and I don't know who it was, the moment that a human being decided that 2 plus 2 equals 4, and 2 plus 2 will always mean 4, and if he has 2 shepselach and 2 shepselach, he has 4 shepselach, and whenever they're going to be 2 shepselach plus 2 shepselach, it's always going to be 4. At that moment, you know what man did? He moved into a completely different world. He moved into the world of abstract thought. The only creature on the face of this earth that is able to think in abstract terms. The human mind is an awesome. What the human mind can create is what we can think of when we're not thinking Narishkeit. That's some of the time. It's awesome what the human mind is able to achieve. All of that thought is abstract. It's not something you can touch or feel. Why does man have the ability to deal with the abstract? because he's created B'Tselem Elokim in the image of God. Mahu, just as God is abstract and not physical, so too man is capable of thinking logically in the abstract. There is no, really no objective definition of beauty. What do they say? Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. You know, what looks beautiful to one is not so beautiful to the next. By the way, this has been debated. There may be certain forms of absolute beauty, but it we usually assume that beauty is simply is very subjective. What I see to be beautiful, somebody else may not see to be beautiful. But there's one thing common to all human beings, and that is when a human being sees pristine nature as God created it, it does something to his neshama. Remember, my wife and I, we were at Grand Canyon, you understand? Lived 500 years in America, never went to the Grand Canyon. But once you come to Israel, and every Israeli and his kid brother has been at the Grand Canyon, so how long can you survive without going to the Grand Canyon? So we went to the Grand Canyon. One of the things that they announced is that at a certain time it's going to be sunset, and everybody should, you know, be at a certain spot to watch sunset over the Grand Canyon. And you have no idea how many people came. Everybody was standing there to watch sunset at the Grand Canyon. I look at my wife, and my wife looks at me. What are they all rushing here to see sunset at the Grand Canyon? So we obviously decided that they came from Brooklyn, where you can live your whole life and not see a sunset. Two nights ago, I was sitting on the on my porch in Har Nof, and it was breathtaking. It's breathtaking. I see sunrise every morning. I see sunset every night. It's unbelievable, the beauty of God's world. But these poor schnooks that came from who knows where in the United States and may never have seen a sunrise in their lives, so here they were standing and just, Morabu Ma'asecho Hashem. Oh, how great is God. This is common to all of mankind. They all are overwhelmed by the beauty of God's pristine nature as it was created, because that's implanted in man by virtue of the fact that he is created B'Tselem Elokim. The Tselem Elokim, as we say, therefore, creates the striving for unity in man. It is that which gives man the ability to think in abstract terms. It is that which gives man the appreciation of the beauty of God's nature. The definition of good. Despite the fact that there's a lot of evil in the world, there's a basic understanding of what's good and what's bad. And most people will agree to the definition of good and bad and evil. For example, what do you do for those who are weak? The weak, the infirm. What do you do? You try and help out. What's man supposed to do? It's instinctive within us that we're going to help out those who are less fortunate than us. There have been, of course, moments in history at which human beings were simply capable of destroying the image of God within them. But for mankind as a whole, it's clearly understood that you stand firmly with the weak and we help out a world like this, that a world becomes concerned, whether it's Darfur or it's Biafra or who knows where it is, or there's a tsunami. The idea of helping out. The Nazi beast was, of course, different. And I think most probably that's why the term beast is used, because they had simply succeeded in eradicating any vestige of Tzelem Elokim, of God's image. The idea that there is a universal understanding of what good is. Why does it happen to people who come from diverse, distant parts of the earth, who never met one another, never talked to one another, and they all have the same instinctive feeling? That instinct that is implanted in man is by virtue of the fact that he's created the Tzel Olekim. We're talking about the cats before. The cats of New York really are not at all concerned about the cats of Eretz Israel. It just doesn't exist. It doesn't exist because there's no Tzel Olekim. The animal is concerned about himself, not himself, but there are times when you can see a sense of an instinctive built-in concern for, I don't know whether for a fellow cat or a dog, of course, learns how to be concerned about their master, but it's all very, very limited, and it's not part of intelligence, it's part of instinct. A dog will never be able to build a nest like a bird can. Incapable. By the way, in all of the thousands of years that we know, birds are still making nests precisely the way they did in other Marishan's days. They're very, very slow. They haven't evolved any further. It's all built into the nature with which they were created. Even the evil of this world, is tinged with good. Because even those who do evil always cover up or find a justification. The Germans, Jews are vermin. Vermin you have to exterminate. What are they saying? They're saying that, you know, we also have a feeling of what's good and what's evil. But what we've decided is, this is obviously good. Exterminating Jews is good. It's the way it always is. All of the most evil of all are always going to find a justification, a rationalization. Why? Because they also have a conscience. Where does somebody get a conscience from? Conscience is only the result of the fact that it's all the Tzelem Elokim that is created in man. There's something that man can do that animal cannot do, unless absolutely trained. A human being can indeed sacrifice his life for a fellow human being. Doesn't exist in the rest of creation. That kind of an altruistic act, it's a far, far better thing I do now than I have ever done. It's a far, far better place that I go to than I have ever been. Sidney Carton is not possible in the animal world. The idea of sacrificing on behalf of somebody else, yes, you can train a dog to do a lot of things for, I don't know, I think Lassie used to go into fires. I don't know what Lassie used to do. The younger people here most probably don't even know who Lassie is. They don't even know who Groucho Marx is. That's on the Bissoyan, on Bissoyan. I think that the most important aspect of man, or maybe two, but they all go together. The human being has a strong desire to do, to create, to build, to fashion. Doesn't exist in the animal world. Where does this come from? It, more than that, I want to go one step further. Man has a desire in one way or another to be eternalized. He wants to be remembered forever. You know why? Because man is created in the image of God. Mahu, the Rav said this in a shir once. Mahu yotzer, just as God fashions and creates. Mahu bore, just as He makes, so too it's a responsibility of the human being also to create. Yes, to fight evil, to battle illness, to build great buildings, great societies, civilizations. God did not want man to remain where he was. He created a world with all of the opportunities there, and now it's given to man that you, as the Gemara says, man should become shutaf l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ma'aseh Bereishis, to become a partner with God in the act of creation. That's what a man is supposed to do during the course of his lifetime. You know why? Because he's created B'Tselem Elokim. He's created in the image of God. So therefore, he has that same sense of a desire to build and to create. And just as God is eternal, Hoya Hove Viye, God is, was, and always will be. Man is always striving for eternity. There are those who will build buildings, those who will write books, those who, children and grandchildren, pretty good way to grasp hold of eternity. You have these sheets in front of you. We're going to do a little reading here. May round out a lot of what we're talking about. By the way, and it's not by the way, this Mishnah is of course going to be the introduction to the next Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva, which we described last week as one of the great one-liners in Talmud. Hakol tzafui v'harashut netuna. Everything is seen by God. V'harashut netuna. Man has free will. The greatest dimension of man's being created in the image of God is by virtue of the fact that he has free will. God, my God, just as God has free will, so man has free will. And of course, we will talk about the meaning of free will, despite the fact that God knows precisely what we're going to do. Here, this is the faith of Judaism. It's from Isidore Epstein. What I really wanted to read was on page 210. You see the page numbers over there, 210. In the middle of the page, in the words of Shabtai Donelow, born 913, in his work Perush Naaseh Adam B'Tzalmenu, this image, he's describing the image of God. This image and likeness of which the Blessed One spoke is not the form of the appearance of the countenanced. It's not the physical countenance, not what a man looks like, but the form of the work of God and his activity in the universe. Man is like God, as God is supreme and rules over man and over all the world, beneath and above, so is man. Man is also supreme on the face of this earth. As God knows and discerns things that happened and foresees things to come, so man whom God has granted wisdom to know. This is also in a very important aspect of Tzelem Elokim. Man can anticipate. In the animal world, there is no such thing as anticipation. There can only be the only kind of a... and this also, now I remember, this is also something that the Rav described in a shir. Yeah, he described, I think it was, he was describing the difference between two terms in Torah that describe a community. One is machaneh, a camp, and the other is eidah, a congregation. The difference between machaneh and eidah is a machane is a group of people who are brought together, and what joins them together is a threat from without. The military camp. We are protecting ourselves from some outside danger. Eidah comes from the word testimony. An Eda is a people that are brought together by virtue of the fact that they testify to certain truths. Eda represents a community with an intellectual idea that they stand for. In order to further explain the difference between Machane and Eda, the Rav said the idea of Machane, of human beings who are joined together for protection from an outside threat, can also be found in the animal world. And he describes how, and I saw this description, I remember one day I saw it in the description of the tsunami, when was that, a year ago, a year and a half ago, when there's some kind of a threat in nature, one will find that from the mountains and the forests, animals begin to flee. And by the way, they're all going to flee as a unit. The lion with the lamb, the wolf with the goat, they all instinctively feel a threat. And I remember reading a description of this sort, the tsunami, that there were places that they saw this phenomenon even before the tsunami had hit. It's built into the nature that the animal world can be a machane, but only human beings can be Eda. The animal world may join together in order to protect or save themselves from some threat to them all that they can do. But they cannot join together for some kind of a great idea. There's no such thing as Eda. All right, let's go further in the words of Shabtai Donalo. So that's why I wanted to say that's the idea of that man can anticipate. Man lives in three time zones. He has memory, he lives in the present, and he also can, in certain ways, anticipate the future. The animal world lives in only one time frame. There's no memory, and there's no ability to anticipate the future. Tzelem Elokim is the idea of living in three time frames. Why? As we have been pointing out, because just as God lives in three, he is Hoyar Hoveviyeh, man who is created in the image of God also lives in all three. I think it's not working out too badly. When we take a look at our definitions and what we believe of God, we can see the same thing is true of man. Man striving for oneness, man's ability to go beyond the physical, man's living in three time zones all at the same time. All of these are part of the ideas of Tzelem Elokim. So Tzelem Elokim doesn't mean at all, the countenance or the physical aspects of man. And of course, above all, watch and we'll see. So man whom God has granted wisdom to know, and as God supplies and gives food to all flesh, so does man sustain all the members of his household, his attendants, and his animals. And as the Creator built the world and laid the foundations of the earth, stretched the heavens and gathered the waters together, so man is able to build, to found, and to call and gather together, to sow, to make grow, to plant, and to do. And in most things, man is likened in small measure to God, in accordance with the limitations of the strength and the short span of the life which God has given him. So that it really means that the human being, when we say that he's created, B'Tzelem Elokim, he is divine-like. He is indeed divine-like. There is no other creature on the face of this earth in any way similar. Here we have set forth the true significance of the biblical teaching that man has been made in the image of God. And this truth is not affected by the substitution of the dust of an animal species for the dust of the earth. Because he had been speaking earlier about the fact that, men may very well have come from the dust of the earth, just like the animal. But he has a divine neshama. It Granted then that the body of the first man was produced by normal generation from a species of non-human ancestors. He's saying, even if you will want to assume, that we are descended from a lower forms of life. I know my Zayda wasn't a monkey. And not even a monkey's uncle, you understand? Nisht. But it says, granted then that the body of the first man was produced by normal generation from a species of non-human ancestors, the divine breath that animated the body brought into existence something new, which now for the first time entered into the sum of existing reality. Yes, there was, let's say there was this clod, this body. But the moment that God breathes into it this divine tselem, everything changes dramatically. And by the way, Darwin or the NDTs, they have no way of measuring the tselem elokim in a human being. Here was a being which could think and will and have dominion. Here was a being new, not in degree, but in kind, transcending in inner perfection all other existing beings. You know what you also have to keep in mind? All of this greatness is expressed time under the terrible heel of Rome. He is surrounded by evil on all sides. To be able to maintain that sense of optimism and to see the real value of man despite the fact that one is surrounded by all of this evil. That's greatness. That's Rabbi Akiva. By the way, wasn't that also true of the famous story that we said about Rabbi Akiva during the first year, that the Chachmei Yisrael, the wise men, see a fox coming out of the Holy of the Holies on the Temple Mount? But what does Rabbi Akiva see? Rabbi Akiva sees a day on which Yerushalayim is going to be rebuilt and the elderly and the young will be in the streets of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Akiva can live surrounded by absolute evil, but he still knows the greatness of man. I'll tell you one of the things that I still owe you, and I know when I owe you something. I've been reading and reading about the Rabbi Ovadia Mibar Tanuda, the Rav. I'm trying to straighten out the dates. Basically, the Rav was born in Italy in about 1435. Don't hold me to any dates. About 1435, 1440, he came on Aliyah in 1485 from northern Italy. He didn't come on a Nefesh B'Nefesh boat, you understand? He came during an extremely difficult time. It was leading up to 1492, you understand. But what struck me, he describes Yerushalayim when he arrived here. There were 60 families in Yerushalayim. The city was rubble and ruins. You know, sometimes When we're stuck in a traffic jam over here, so I try to pinch myself instead of, I have one of two things. I can honk my horn, but I can't do that. I can pinch myself, don't get upset. My wife always tells me, she throws back at me what I always said, you know, David HaMelech would take a look at the traffic jam in Yerushalayim, he wouldn't believe it. Rabbi Akiva would, because Rabbi Akiva foresaw it. Rabbi Ovadia Mibar Tanura arrives here at the end of the 15th century, and there are 60, maybe 70 families in Yerushalayim, all poverty-stricken, penurious. I don't know, he must have had miracles. He arrived here on the 13th day of the month of Nisan. That's the day. That night he had to be Beidik Chometz, but he didn't have, I'm sure he didn't have, I don't know where he was, but he had a place for Yontif. Somebody took him in, understand? Here's the great Rabbi Ovadia Mibar Tanura. By the time he died, 15 years later, and it seems, according to most historians, he wrote his entire commentary on the Mishnah in Yerushalayim after he made Aliyah. You have to understand what Rashi is to Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, and Talmud Bavli. This is what the Rav Rabbi Ovadia Mibar Tanura is to Mishnah. He is the Rashi. He is the great one. He is the great one. So, by the time he dies, 15 years later, there's a community of 200 families. Do you hear? 200 families. I'm always fond of quoting the... after a visit back to West Hempstead, after I'd been away for about 6-7 years, so somebody tells me, Rabbi, since you left, the community doubled in size. I love that. I once told you that. Yeah, it's true. It's true, by the way. So I said, oh, but you should know, since I arrived in Har Nof, it's grown 100 times over. They said, no, Rabbi, I didn't mean that. The truth is that he didn't mean it. You know, he said, you know, you laid the foundations in the community. You know, you built the mikveh, you built the Erev, you approved the new building, you made sure that there was a kosher pizza place. What else does a community need in order to grow in the United States? But over here, I was thinking of that when it says 15 years later, when he dies, the Yerushalayim has 200 families. Do you understand? From the time the Bar Tanura came to Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim more than doubled in size. Who was coming to live in Yerushalayim then? And there weren't many more than maybe a few thousand, 2,000-3,000 people in the whole city. Take a look. Give a kick. Look what happened over here. I mean, sometimes we have to look at the good side of things, just compare it. So every time I learn a piece of the Bar Tanura, I think, take a look at the Bar Tanura. Can you imagine him coming into Yerushalayim and 60, 70 families? That's it. That's the whole Yerushalayim. There's even another, I think it was when the Ramban came. The Ramban came about 100 years earlier. There wasn't a minyan in Yerushalayim. For Shabbos or for Yom Tov, they had to import a Jew or two, you understand? Stand by Shar Yafo looking for a Tzaintim Tzeminyan, you understand? He had about 6 or 7 people in the city, and they had to import people so that there should be a minyan. Oi, go compare that. What are you talking about, a minyan? Minyan never stop in the city. This city never sleeps from Minyanim. There's Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv 24 hours. If I can go to the Kaisel, they can't find. What a dramatic difference. Even at moments when life gets a little difficult over here, we have to remember that awesome steps forward have been made. All right. Just let's finish off a little bit more over here. It is true that we find some rudiments of intelligence low down in the animal creation to the extent of planning and contriving, mating, laying snares, storing food for the future, migration according to season. In other words, it seems in the animal world there are all sorts of manifestations of intelligence. So he says it's not intelligence, it was built in by nature. Migration according to season, all of which connotes a degree of consciousness. Among the higher animals which have become domesticated, we can even trace some human characteristics, notably a recognition of men as higher beings, a kind of affection for them, which may be dignified with the name of love, culminating in an attitude which is not different from what we call worship. This is conspicuous, particularly in a dog's relation to his master, leading even to a sense of wrongdoing, which may perhaps figuratively be described as a sense of sin and followed by a sort of repentance or at least expectation of punishment. You know, a dog that's done something wrong, whining a little bit, and I have 2 tookies. What do you call them? Parakeets. Every time I come home, I say, Abba's home, and I don't get any no response whatsoever. No, garnished, garnished. I was away for a week. It didn't make a difference to them at all. Goodness, goodness. Okay, well, yet with all the mental affinities between men and animals, his superiority, in the words of Julian Huxley, to the impersonality and irrationality of the rest of the universe, marks him. The rest of the universe, whatever you want, the rest of the universe is impersonal and irrational. Only man is rational. Marks him as a distinct being, different in kind from all animals in creation. This superiority lies in man's faculty of reason, or the power of deducing new truths from those which he already knows, of passing from known to the unknown. This is what we were talking about at the beginning of this year. I'm reading this because it's a chazara. We were talking about the moment that man was able to arrive at the conclusion that 2 plus 2 equals 4 and 2 plus 2 will always be 4. This is the moment at which he has moved into the world of the abstract, or from the known to the unknown. Man adds to the quality of Chachma that of Bina. Chachma and Bina. Bina means the ability to understand and to reason. Defined by the rabbis as the capacity to understand one thing from another, whilst in the lower creation we seek in vain for traces of Bina. All right. On the next page, page 213, so we can finish off. Page 213. In the middle of there, he says that at the beginning, birds make their nests now as they have always made them, in the same shape and with similar materials. Nothing has changed in the animal world. They are generally speaking non-educable. They can never reach the level of education to which deaf and dumb children can be brought. All this is because they lack the faculty of reason, because they are irrational. Man alone is progressive. Man alone is inventive. Man alone is able to design consciously things new and old, because he alone is rational. Man alone is able to apply himself to an infinity of subjects and pass from one occupation to another. By the way, that's an amazing thing about a human being. Not only that, he can talk on the phone, the regular one in the house, answer the cell phone, chew gum, think about a Shvera Blad Gemara, you understand? He can do so many things at one and the same time, and even if he doesn't do them at the same time. But he can move with a certain degree of ease from one occupation or one vocation or one thought process to another. Man alone is capable to apply himself to an infinity of subjects and pass from one occupation to another. He may begin life as a laborer and end as an artist. He may begin as a rabbi and end as a laborer. The lower animals are pinned down to one set of actions. A bird will never hollow out an hexagonal cell, nor will a bee with all its mathematical genius build a simple bird's nest of leaves and branches. The characteristic of the work of man, on the other hand, as Shaftai Donalu already emphasized in the passage quoted, is diversity. Because man alone of all creation is given the power of reason. So he's added, for that matter, he's added, Ma HaKadosh Baruch Hu, diverse. Just as God is able to do everything, kach, so too the human being. Mahu Af'ata describes Tzelem Elokim. Whatever exists within God finds its expression some way within man. That's what Rabbi Akiva is saying. Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem. When Rabbi Akiva is saying this, he is clearly talking about all mankind. He's not talking about Jews. Next week we're going to talk about the next step. Chaviv in Yisrael, beloved are Israel, who are called Bonim Lamakom, God's children. Oh, that's going to take us into a whole new discussion. Okay.